Southampton's Voice.
Voice FM.
Hello, good afternoon and welcome to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. From startups to established companies, I'll be bringing you a variety of guests from Southampton's business community. And today I'm in the studio with management consultant Hannah Wallace-Golden from Hantech Systems. Hannah, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Matt. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. Great to be here.
You are most welcome. I know we've got a super exciting show lined up. Let's kick off, shall we?
Let's
kick off. So I'm curious, what does a management consultant do?
So what I do, that's easier. I won't speak for all consultants because they'll probably be phoning me after the show saying I don't do that.
It's very unique as well.
It is, and it can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. What we do is help people create their exceptional organisation, and we do that through compliance. Doesn't sound like the most exciting thing in the world, but staying out of jail, pretty exciting.
Yep.
Running a great organisation, also exciting.
True.
So we help people with their policies, processes, any regulation, compliance matters that they need, and we use that as a platform to grow their business.
Nice. And of course, outside of work, you are a bit of a football supporter.
Big football supporter.
What team do you support?
Support Arsenal. Yep, I'm sat here in my jumper.
Oh, I love it. So management consultancy then, was it something that you always wanted to get into?
Absolutely not. Oh, no, not at all.
Tell us more.
So I went to Canterbury Christchurch University a long time ago now to study geography. Had no idea really what I wanted to be. Mm. Maybe a police officer.
Like a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's really common. And I wouldn't really shout about going to university without much of a plan. It's a bit unnecessary, but I did, you know, have a great time and everything, and yeah, thought about being a police officer, found out quite quickly that I wouldn't like to be in that kind of space where you have to work weekends and have to work evenings and shift work and that sort of thing.
Sure.
So yeah, a lot of joke on me that I ended up a primary school teacher, but we'll come to that.
And there was a vet and a teacher also in the mix at some point, wasn't it?
Yeah, loved animals as a kid, loved working with children, sort of teenage years and early adulthood and stuff, but yeah, still wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. Left uni without a clue, and my dad said come and work for me. He had Hantech Systems, it had been going since 95 or so, and my mum said I think she should go out and figure out what she wants to do, which was probably the best advice she's ever given me.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mum, if you're listening.
Yeah, shout out to Mum and Dad.
Yeah, she also said you're not allowed to sit around and do nothing.
That's fair enough.
So I was pretty much going to go back to, I had a part-time job at uni, delivering people shopping for a popular supermarket. Mm. So yeah, I just thought I'll do that. I didn't. I pretty much within space of a week or two of being home from uni, I had called up my old secondary school. I'd done some sort of work placement and ended up doing a school direct, got my PGCE, became a primary school teacher.
Yeah, nice. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because you said earlier in the week that's given you quite a few transferable skills.
Oh, yes.
Are there any that sort of, that stand out?
Short of making some jokes at this point, which obviously might not be popular, comparing my time teaching 8-9-year-olds with working with business owners and CEOs. But I think the main thing was kind of that analytical brain,
yeah,
or mindset.
Sure.
So kind of educating children, you need to be aware of what are they doing well, what are they struggling with, and then create plans to, fill those gaps,
yeah,
or to further their learning. And I think with business owners, it's similar. I love going into a business and figuring out what makes it tick, what's working really well, what could use a helping hand, and what can I do to help that business fill those gaps.
Yeah, and process in business is quite important, isn't it?
Really important.
Why is that?
It's kind of like, I think I might have said something like this earlier in the week, building a house, you don't just figure out what windows you'd like or the doors. You have to build the foundations first,
sure,
because you haven't even got a house otherwise. So I kind of think as process in that respect, so with any kind of organisation, doesn't just have to be a business, it might be a charity, for example. You need to have that bedrock, you need to have that foundation. Having those processes set and documented that people can refer to so that they know how to do a certain aspect is really makes that business quite safe and secure.
Yeah, absolutely. So you did teaching for a little bit.
I did.
And then what happened?
A lot of things in a short space of time, really. So I had some fantastic colleagues. I worked at a fantastic school and I loved working with the children. Anything, half 7 till half 5, 6 o'clock was fantastic. And then came everything else, and I was kind of handing my life over to it, And when I wasn't, I was beating myself up either way. So if I was sort of trying to spend time with the family, it felt like school wasn't getting the best of me, and vice versa. And I was kind of thinking to myself, I didn't want to be one of those teachers who I might have been taught by when I was at schools, you know, who retire 60, 65 and really regret that they didn't do certain things in life. And then a lot of other difficult things happened. And yeah, the dynamic of the school was changing slightly, and it just kind of felt like if I was going to do something different and make myself a bit happier, maybe now was the time. Went for dinner with my parents. They recognised I wasn't very happy. And that question came up again. Do you want to come and work for me? And this time my mum didn't say no. So yeah, so I started working with my dad.
Brilliant. And the name, so the name of the company is Handtech Systems.
Yeah, it is.
Where did that come from?
Everyone asks this because they know I've got a sister. So I was born in 92, and then Handtech came around more like 95. My sister wasn't born till 98, I will say. So I'm sorry, Lucy. Yeah, my dad, his old boss was really supportive of the what my dad wanted to do and the direction he wanted to take quality management, as it was then, all focused around the customer, the old school quality manual, 9001. And he really encouraged my dad to go out and do what he wanted to do with in that area. And his suggestion was SecTech Systems, so Security Technical Systems. I don't think it sounds that great. My dad didn't think it sounded that great then, but he just got the idea of HANA. I was the only one. HANA Technical Systems, Handtech. It just came to him.
Fell into place.
Yeah, what I love about it now is not that it's named after me. I love that we could do anything. So it doesn't matter what Handtech does. We could do anything under that name and you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
But yes, it's HANA Technical Systems.
And it's interesting you say that, because not only do you get involved in, you know, the quality management side and the processes, you're also a mental health first aider, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Yeah, mental health
first
aider.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Just after the pandemic, so it was early 2021, I just became really aware that some of our clients were great at the physical side. They had fire wardens, they had first aiders, but they weren't taking care of the kind of mental side. And I wasn't, for myself and my friends and family either. And I just really wanted to be more in the know in that space. And of course, for anyone who has done the mental health first aid, you know, full course, you're not, you know, you're not a diagnostician. You know, I'm not able to diagnose people's mental health, but it gives you a lot of resources. And I find now that I'm just able to get involved more with our clients with conversations when I am talking about compliance and process. I'm much more of a people person, so I'd rather understand why are people not doing what they do. And sometimes it's a little bit deeper than just because it's quicker or because I don't have time. So yeah, it's been really great for me to kind of get that tool in our toolbox, understand myself better. It's really helped personally. And yeah, I just think that every organisation needs to have at least one person that has done that course. I'd really advocate for that, because it's just, yeah, really key to people giving support to those around them in the business world.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. How receptive have businesses been when you've sort of spoken to them about it?
Very much so. I think there's quite a lot of our client base have had someone do the course or an aspect of it. And we have actually had a couple of clients ask me to spend more time with their staff. So I'm not necessarily doing internal auditing or implementing a new process, just spending some more time with their staff so that they've got this outsourced person to speak to, because it's not always easy to talk to someone that you work with every day.
No, I can imagine. Yeah. It's interesting when it comes to kind of business processes and all that sort of stuff. Do you find the businesses that you work with, sometimes all of that information is in someone's head and it's not necessarily written down or documented or easy for, say, someone that's just joined the team to kind of be able to pick that process up? How does it work?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, that's a real key thing that we deal with, is that someone knows what to do and they know how to do it, but everyone else might not, because that's not somewhere that they can access it. Whether that's, sometimes that's physical information. People love to have stuff scrawled away on their desktop and not in the shared area, which can lead to a whole nother.
Does that happen quite a lot?
So much. And then it's not backed up. And, you know, I won't even get into the information security implications of all of that. But yeah, going back to process, I think a lot of people started their fantastic organization just from maybe them and a small team. Being good at what they do. I'm going to do this for a living. Oh, all of a sudden, I need to hire some more people. And if you've not had that robust management system from day one, then as you bring more and more people into the business and as you're onboarding more staff, that structure might be a little bit crumbly. And as you're bringing people in, they haven't got those spaces that they can turn to when they need that kind of help, support, and that kind of documented way of doing things.
Yeah. What impact does it tend to have when, say, for instance, staff aren't following a particular process? What impact can that have on the business?
Worst case scenario is it's going to cost somebody money. Mm. It might cost somebody their life. I love painting the blackest picture there.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah, we get involved in a lot of health and safety management. And yeah, people that are not following those processes of how to use a machine, what PPE to wear, have they had that machine serviced, you know, recently and in a timely manner. So yeah, the worst case scenario is someone's going to get hurt, or it's going to cost the business a lot of money somehow, and somebody with director in their title might be going to prison. So we do what we do to, you know, help people sleep at night and help the businesses run smoothly and ensure that everyone's day at work is as successful as it can be. People really should focus on what's making them money, and we can focus on that compliance aspect. And if those processes kind of aren't followed, then yeah, that's the worst case scenario. On a more realistic level, lots of people don't follow process because they don't have time, they don't have the resource, and on the day-to-day that might look like a client of theirs not getting the best service. It might look like a product that's gone to market and isn't the best it could be.
Mm. Yeah, sure. So as well as the sort of mental health first aider aspect, what other aspects of the business do you get involved in a day-to-day basis?
So I'm also a motivational mapper. Oh. It sounds great. So a lot of people will know about psychometric testing, I don't know, Myers-Briggs or something like that. This isn't that. It doesn't look at people's personalities. It looks at their motivations. What gets them out of bed in the morning? What puts kind of energy in their battery, if you like? And it looks at a specific person in their job role, in the business that they're in or organisation that they're in at a given time. And it ranks 9 motivators. So, for example, I think mine has always been number one searcher, which is all about having a purpose and making a difference. Mm-hmm. And yeah, at certain times you might find something like a builder comes into your top three because you're quite concerned about your, you know, financial situation or your material rewards and quality of life. So I love using that with clients. Really helps. It's just a tool. It's just a tool for conversation. But it really helps me understand kind of the motivations of different teams. And if there's a team that's underperforming and not working quite as well as they could, it's a fantastic tool to get those people talking. It gives them a common language, and then they can work towards common goals. So yeah, we're really enjoying the projects we've got ongoing at the moment using that.
I'd like to delve into that a little bit more in perhaps part two, but it sounds very much like the insights discovery thing, which I know they sort of use in HR, and it turns different people's personality traits into different colors.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, so it gives you an idea of kind of, you know, what's the best way to approach someone that's a yellow person or someone that's a red person, for instance. So management consultancy then, it wasn't your original career of choice.
No, the teacher thing was there first. I'm a people person, and yeah, I really didn't see how I was going to pave my way into the business world at all.
And here we are. Could you see yourself doing anything else?
No, I think I'm wildly unemployable. So I worked for a fantastic head teacher who was above and beyond all the time. And yeah, she was really great at supporting all of us. And then I've gone from that level of care and support and work environment to working with my dad. So it's a, you know, small family run business. He always says I work with him, I don't work for him. And I feel that. And that's kind of over the last 5.5, 6 years, we have grown the business to that. And I do feel as though Hantech Systems is mine to run as well. And yeah, I really enjoy that space.
It's amazing. You're not the first person to say something similar. You know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, once you go self-employed, you make yourself unemployable.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. I listened to your show with Sally Golden, and I heard her say about that having that structure is the only difficult thing sometimes with being self-employed. But everything else, I mean, yeah, obviously there's risk, and obviously it's your name on everything all of the time. There's no one you can turn to and say, oh, it was their fault, or they, you know, it's on us all the time. Mm. But actually that level of ownership is really actually what motivates me.
Absolutely. And hopefully you've got some robust processes to fall back on should you need them in-house.
Absolutely. Of course we do everything that we recommend our clients do.
Practice what you preach. Well, look, we need to take a short break. We've got some music. We've got a few ads to play, but we're going to be back for part two where Hannah and I, we're going to be delving into Hantech and talking a bit more about ISO 9001, processes, policies, but also vision, mission and values. Bit of a mouthful there. So yeah, don't go away. We'll be back soon.
Voice FM.
You name it, we'll collect it. So a bed? Yup. A sofa? Yup. All right, what about a shed?
Yes.
So anything?
Everything non-hazardous.
Hi there, I'm Steve.
And I'm Woody.
And we're the co-founders of Ethiclear.
We collect waste and clear houses.
And we do it ethically.
Because if your waste is good enough to be used again,
we'll make sure it is.
As Ethiclear has a network of like-minded people around Southampton.
So for anything
of almost any size
that you can't shift,
book your clearance at ethiclear.co.uk.
So I got a home office in the garden, and in the spring and the autumn it's perfect. But in the middle of winter and summer, it's not fun. The heater costs a fortune when it's cold outside, and in the summer, opening the windows just isn't enough. Which is why I got Just Coolers to install a small air conditioning unit. It keeps me cool in the summer and warm in the winter. It's the most cost-effective way of doing it. And with a 5-year guarantee and prices from £799, what's not to like? For your free quote, just visit just-coolers.com and keep your home office just right.
Voice FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. Little bit on the hoof here, actually.
I feel like it.
Absolutely.
I do feel like it. Yeah. I feel like I'm not prepared for this next section.
Well, we are. We've got loads of notes in front of us, but we end up just having a chat, which I absolutely love on this show. So Hannah is from Hantech Systems. And Hannah, I just wondered whether or not, for the benefit of the listeners that have maybe just tuned in a nutshell, right, maybe give us a 60-second elevator pitch. What does Hantech Systems do?
Hantech Systems create exceptional organisations. Mm-hmm. So we work with our clients, all underpinned by compliance. So we help them with essentially growing the value of the business,
nice.
Increasing the multiplier of the business, hopefully reducing risk, which can then have a positive impact on things like their insurances and stuff like that. Ultimately, we help people with that kind of management system for whatever it might be. And we don't always hone in on a particular ISO standard or British standard. That's kind of just an output of what we do.
Sure.
You don't have to have those things.
Yeah.
We just love working with companies who really care about their people, really care about their customers, the product or service they offer, and really want to increase the value of that business.
I was going to say, you must really enjoy sort of getting under the bonnet of these businesses and sort of, you know, ultimately helping them build, I suppose, what's the best way to describe it? A business that's maybe more robust?
Absolutely more robust, yeah. Yeah, I've had some great conversations with people recently who have passed comment on that they've had a client who has had an insurance claim, and when they were able to go back and they had this whole paper trail, they had internal audits, they had really clear procedures of how things had to be reported, that really helped in that scenario.
Mm.
We've had clients win tenders because they have put the time and the effort into shoring up that kind of robust management system in their organisation.
Yeah, because I suppose if you're pitching to a bigger customer, they want to see that you can deliver consistently, I suppose. So they want to see that you've got these robust, you know, processes in place.
Yeah, whatever the focus might be. So, you know, everyone hears and knows about ISO 9001 quality management. That is a kind of bread and butter for us.
Mm.
We love getting involved with environmental management. That's 14001. Information security is also a personal favorite of
hot
mine
topic as well, I imagine, with, you know, malware and
yeah.
cyber security and all this sort of stuff. You see,
yeah.
you know, big organizations getting hacked.
Yeah, you do. And also, you know, the parameters on that are changing, and people did a lot of work in 2018 with GDPR and Data Protection Act in 2018, yeah. and it's now 2024.
Things have moved on.
Things have moved on, and if you can't demonstrate that you have got that kind of mechanism in place to, you know, your own sort of due diligence, if you like, within your business, then if something were to go awry, that's going to come down on you a lot heavier. Whereas if you've got ISO 27001, information security, maybe we've been in and helped you with our data protection toolkit, for example, then, yeah, that kind of evidence goes a long way if something should go awry.
For anyone that doesn't know the whole sort of ISO 9001, I mean, can you give us that in a nutshell? Like, kind of what is that?
ISO 9001 was my introduction to Hantech. Actually, it wasn't. Anti-money laundering was my introduction. We won't go there. 9001, put really simply, is an international standard all about quality management. It's all about the customer service that your customer receives. And the items within that standard actually are the same as lots of other ISOs. So they're all mapped the same. They all take into consideration the leadership of a business, communication, context of that organisation, and then things like the people, the resources, the operation, and then the favourite phrase of everyone, non-conformance. And what do we do with it? Non-conformity and corrective action, to give it its full name. So, yeah, it kind of takes the whole journey from what do we do, why do we do it, how do we do it, right through to what do we do if something does go wrong. But all of that standard is focused on quality management.
Is it something that businesses will tend to do kind of, you know, off their own back, or is it something that maybe a customer has specified it as part of a tender? Like, when do businesses tend to need this kind of regulation or compliance?
Both of those examples you just gave, we see all the time.
Sure.
We love working with people when it's not necessarily being forced upon them in a tender or something, just because when someone comes to us and says, I really just want to shore up my organization, or my favorite phrase was, I want to raise the bar in the industry, then fantastic. You're already aligning yourself with why I get up and go to work. So let's do that. But equally, it's definitely not wrong to do this stuff because someone is asking you to, because why would you not want to win a tender? If you can better your business and win that tender at the same time, why would you not do that? So yeah, we absolutely work with people who, want to kind of go out to tender or win a new client. Maybe it's to add a bit of competition. So lots of our clients are in a similar industry. If they want to kind of raise the bar, maybe they'll be looking at another ISO that their competitor down the road doesn't have, just to give that assurance to their customers.
It's interesting you say that, because it's almost like the award effect. So, you know, if a company wins an award, they can then say, well, we're award winning.
Yeah.
So when you're going out and you like say you're up against a competitor and they haven't necessarily won that award, then it sort of it gives you a sort of point on the board, doesn't it?
It does. If you were working, I'll use an IT company as an example, because it's my favourite. I'm really trying to understand those guys and love it. The work that they do, obviously, is really crucial to all of their customers. If you've got an IT company that's got ISO 27001 certificated and you've got an IT company that doesn't, I know who I'd use. Just because you're giving me that extra assurance that you're considering keeping my information safe and secure.
That's right. How long does it typically take? I mean, that might be a bit like how long's a piece of string, but, you know, is it a couple of weeks? Is it a couple of months? Is it years to sort of get this kind of level of accreditation?
Definitely not years. We've onboarded some new clients at the end of 2023. They are looking for certification sort of quarter two. It depends sometimes on the certification bodies. They're quite busy at the moment. So we can normally work with a business, particularly if they've got lots of things in place already, which most people do, they just don't realise it. So we don't always, you know, we don't go in and reinvent the wheel, because you're already running a great organisation. We're just going to fill in those gaps and make it a little bit better. And essentially, yeah, maybe 6 months or so, 6 to 9 months is a really nice time frame, because one of the key things is you need to get all of your team on board. So if you've got a large staff, you've really got to get this message out to everyone that this is how we are running the show.
What sort of size organisations do you tend to work with?
We've got everything from a nearly one-man band up to some larger clients. We don't at the moment work with anyone that's kind of at a really high corporate level or, you know, hundreds of staff. But that's, I guess, the benefits to us of being a small family business. You know, we keep our kind of clients quite local, or try to, in the sort of Hampshire area and neighbouring counties.
If there are any IT companies out there that maybe are thinking about getting some help with what you guys do, would you like to hear from them?
I would love to hear from them. Love to hear from them. Yes, please.
So you don't just focus on the sort of processes and the policies. You also do a bit of work around vision, mission, values. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that kind of works?
Yeah, so the way that we see it is that people come to us and say, oh, do you do ISO? Now, ISO is an outcome of what we do. What we actually love to do is work with businesses on things like their strategy, on their risk management. And a large part of that is understanding what's the vision for the business, what's this mission, what's this journey that you want to go on, and what are the values that underpin that. And then the best day at work for both me and my dad, I think, is when the values of that company align with our values. So we, you know, working with people that have just got that high level of integrity, they really want to do things because it's the right thing to do, not because they feel like they have to do it. Do it because it's the standard. Do it because it's the right thing and it feels good to do the right thing. So we do a lot of work on kind of that strategy aspect. whether that's kind of 90-day sprints, 6 months, we might turn that into a five-year plan, and something even longer. We have businesses come to us because they want to grow the business to exit and sell. They might, succession planning, they're handing it down to children or something like that. It's amazing how as soon as someone wants to hand their business down to their children, suddenly they want to make sure that their processes and policies are absolutely watertight.
Yeah, I need to get all this out of my head.
Yeah, I need to get this all out of my head because now I've got to teach my kids how to do it, and I really want my kids to do it the right way and the easy way.
Yeah. It's one of those things. Do you find that some businesses, they tend to only think about this stuff when they're perhaps bigger than they might have been when they first started, but actually when it comes to processes and making things robust, does it actually pay dividends to sort of do that early on?
So much easier, yeah, and so much quicker.
Sure.
So to do that earlier on, as soon as you're starting an organization, thinking about what you do, how you do it, why you're doing it. We all know about the power of why and Simon Sinek, and we all need to know why we do what we do. And I think that sometimes we get some prospects come to us who say that they've waited until they had a certain number of staff, or they've waited until their turnover was this much. And that's absolutely fine. I can understand it. All I would say is that it's a slightly bigger job now because there's more people to get on the same page, and there's a bit of a bigger training aspect. There might be a higher cost. So with the certification, they take into consideration the number of staff, and then that becomes number of days of audit. So the cost is then higher.
Yeah.
So if you start this sort of stuff when you're smaller, and then as you grow, it grows. But that's a kind of something that you can stomach. Whereas, doing it when you're kind of a large organisation and someone says, oh, you've got 50 staff or 100 staff. Oh, that's going to be this many days and it's this much money. And I'm not talking about us, I'm talking about the certification bodies. So yeah, it's much easier to do it when you're smaller. And then you've just got the bedrock to grow your organisation, rather than trying to do something different partway down the line.
Yeah, that's it. It sounds like it's much easier to put the foundations in at the start rather than trying to underpin the whole house,
later on. Yeah, literally that. I think using a car is quite a good analogy. Like, you're going to want to make sure that your wheels and your tyres are absolutely brilliant before you start hoofing it off around the country. because the flip side is, I've only focused on having a nice stereo and I've waited until I've got five people in the car before I put the petrol in, and all those sorts of silly little analogies. Just do it when you're small. But if you've already got a big organisation, fantastic. I love a challenge.
It definitely makes sense. With what you do, does it help with onboarding staff?
Massively so. Yeah, massively so. We've actually had some instances recently where people have found it really valuable that they've had, they've got 10 operational processes and they've onboarded someone. And instead of asking a person who's been with the company quite a long time to spend, 2-3 weeks of their time educating this person, showing them all the software, showing them the systems, instead they can pretty much go, this is how you do what you do. It's all written down here. If you've got any questions, I'm sat right here. And people are finding that they're really saving on that kind of money in that training space if they've already got the kind of items documented that person's going to need. And really crucially as well, taking it back a step, is the kind of interview process. I won't get too much into HR because I'm not a specialist, but having that kind of form, that documented set of questions for when you're onboarding someone or when you're, interviewing someone, that can really save you further down the line. If any queries popped up, you asked me that in my interview. Or I didn't, because here's my set of questions, that sort of thing. I'm putting this quite simply, but it's kind of all about, for us, just, if someone says, how do I do this? There's an answer. If someone says, what do I do if this happens? There's an answer. As opposed to people just brushing it under the carpet or looking at each other and not knowing what to do next.
Yeah, or thinking, where was that document I saved a little while ago? And I'm going to have to do it now. I'm going to have to do it again now.
Yeah.
It's already, it's there, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly that.
It's interesting because you've mentioned the word compliance a couple of times and it might sound a little bit heavy-handed, but what does that actually mean?
Yeah, we joke, and for anyone I know who's listening who's an accountant, they'll know that I make this joke, and they know it's only in jest, that if we're in a room with an accountant, we're like the most boring people in the room. Someone says to me, what do you do? I'm a compliance consultant. You're a what? What does that mean? Basically, we make sure that people meet any regulation, standard, legislation, whatever it might be that they need to meet so that they can sleep at night, to make sure that they're doing the things they need to do when they need to do it.
Sure.
A large part of what we do is understanding all the rules and regulations that our given client might need to adhere to, and then helping them do that.
Yeah.
So whether that is something like an ISO standard is one thing, but also there's a lot of, obviously, health and safety law, there's environmental legislation. So we help people to kind of meet those areas, whether that's something as kind of day-to-day routine as waste management, which is something that's a bit topical at the moment, or whether that's something, you know, on a much higher scale, on a much more legal nature. So we are just there really to help our clients sleep at night.
Yeah. Is it specific? What you do, is it specific to any particular industry, or can it literally be across?
It can absolutely across anything. I mean, everyone's got law and legislation, right, to adhere to, whether that's you and me leaving here later, getting in our cars. So it's not even just specific to businesses. But yeah, it's we've got a lot of clients in the security and life safety. So fire alarm systems, intruder alarm systems, that sort of thing. It's very historic. It comes from the ISO 9001 quality manual, being those companies meeting that standard to get what's called NSI Gold, or National Security Inspectorate. But we've diversed out of that space. We've got a lot of experience in that space and a lot of industry knowledge. But we've got clients who provide extras for TV and film.
Oh, wow.
We love getting involved in, or my dad particularly loves getting involved in manufacturing and kind of fabrication and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, there's not really... there's not really a specific industry that kind of we love to work with, or that we obviously work with as such. For us, it goes back to that mission and values. Why are you doing what you're doing? And can we work together based on that?
It sounds great. Well, look, hold that thought, because we're actually at the end of part two already, can you believe?
Time is flying.
I know, time is flying. But don't go away, because in part three, we're going to be diving into some of the challenges that Hannah's faced along the way, not only in your own business journey, which has been, you know, really unique and really interesting, but of course some of the challenges that Handtech have faced as well, especially around COVID and all that sort of stuff. So don't go away. You're listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. We'll be back in just a moment.
Live and local, Voice FM.
Let's hear more from Ian at Station Motors.
I think it's important to have a family business. My customers relate to it. I've been doing cars for people, and now I'm doing their son's cars. My daughter works in reception, and my son's nearly a fully qualified accountant. He does my bookwork, both very good drivers. I used to walk to school past his garage. It was a petrol station back then, so I ended up buying the garage off that family, you know. So I like to think I've brought my family into that family business.
Station Motors Woolston, by the Itchen Bridge.
This is the sound of exercise when it's made fun. It's called VisoSport, and it started in Southampton. You meet up, you play fun games, you exercise, you laugh, you keep fit. It's for people of all abilities. Visit visosport.net or search for VisoSport in Meetup, and have fun getting fit.
Southampton's Voice FM.
I'm here in the studio, and you're listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. And I'm here in the studio with the incredible Hannah from Handtech Systems, who is a management consultant. But not just that, mental health first aider, the mind mapping stuff.
Motivational maps,
yep. All sorts of stuff.
That's on the CV too.
I love that. We just left off by, Hannah was really sort of going into a bit of detail really about what Handtech do and how they help businesses with things like compliance, putting robust processes in place to really make the business, I suppose, run smoothly.
Yes, absolutely. And avoid the pitfalls,
maybe, yeah. Give it a bit of longevity.
Absolutely, yes.
Quite good if someone's maybe looking to exit the business.
Looking to exit, yeah, look at themselves, whether that's, you know, management buyout or looking to sell in another way, succession planning, or just grow the business. You know, we don't always need to talk about people leaving. Sometimes people want to stay and they want to grow. And why not? That's what I'd like to do for us. So yeah, it's always different. Every day is very different. Some days I'm driving all around the country. Some days I'm remote working, because since COVID we've been able to offer that as a service, you know, remotely supporting our clients, which is great. So every day is different.
Nice. Well, look, before we get into some of the challenges that you faced along the way, because as part of this show I love to give people a bit of inspiration to show them that, you know, in business there are going to be challenges, but if you make the leap, if you go self-employed or you start your own business, then there is always a way forward. But before we get into that, I just wanted to talk about some of the pitfalls that you sort of experienced with some of the businesses that have maybe tried to put processes in place, because I know you said, like, complacency is something that is such a common pitfall.
Yeah, complacency, where they've got an accreditation certification and they've just let it fall by the wayside. Mm. So they got it back, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever it might be, and now perhaps lots of new people have come into the business, or there's a slightly new product or service that they offer. Things have diversified, or just the fact that it's been on the wall for 10 years and they haven't really refreshed it. Sometimes it's okay because they're living and breathing it and it's become organic, and that's fantastic. Sometimes it's because, going back to what we said earlier, they've had it put on them by someone else. So, oh, you want to win this tender, you need this, fine. and then they've kind of forgotten about it. And that's when you start to see kind of those situations crop up. You know, accidents can happen, whether that's, you know, figuratively or theoretically. So, yeah, it's about kind of getting what we said earlier about people that have got it stuck in their head. That's a big pitfall. Get it out, get it written down. New people are going to join. They're going to be grateful for that. And the people you've already got in the business will understand the importance of what this is, what this journey is that you're on. And kind of, yeah, that complacency, that becomes a real hazard.
Yeah. And I suppose when it comes to processes, it obviously does probably relies on people reporting stuff when maybe something doesn't go right or go the way it should. And it's kind of like, do you see instances where maybe people aren't writing stuff down or they're not reporting noise or whatever it is you call it? And it's having those processes in place so that, you know, the staff feel comfortable to be able to do that. Because ultimately, the bigger picture is the business will be stronger as a whole, I suppose.
Yes, completely. Yeah. Accident reporting, you know, incident reporting, people that are listening that have got sort of health and safety processes in place and an environment, they know what I'm talking about. And you know, you hear people say things like, oh, I don't know, I crashed my van yesterday. I reversed it into a bollard and I don't know what to do. They should know what to do. They should have a really clear structure of who to phone and what to do to help them feel safe and them to feel safe in that situation. And the same goes for internally. I'm sure that if businesses actually reported how many emails they accidentally send to Matt Thompson instead of Matt Trevis, for example, and you know, let's not even think about what that email might have been sharing. My favourite question is, you know, how many customer complaints have you had? It doesn't need to be War and Peace, but you know, how many people have phoned up with a little niggle that you've put right? Oh, none. Okay, it's not real life, is it? You know, people love a little moan. It's not real life. So having those processes and then use them, don't get complacent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's delve into some of the challenges that you faced along the way then. You know, since obviously being an integral part of Hantec, you know, what are some of the challenges that you guys have faced over the years?
Kind of thinking about it, I guess, chronologically, my first challenge was finding that instant reward. You're teaching a child and they get it. That's fantastic. That feeling is just incredible. And yeah, within the first sort of 6 to 9 months of being with Hantec, I had a lot of conversations with my dad about, I'm just not feeling it. I don't see what difference I'm making.
Oh, you don't feel like you're making an impact.
Yeah, I'm not sure that, like, yeah, that I'm doing the right thing. And it absolutely transpired I was just kind of looking for it in all the wrong places, I think.
Okay.
So yeah, children, it's kind of instant gratification. Their very big smiley faces give it away. Working with adults is a little bit different. You know, we play our cards closer to the chest sometimes. So for me, it was, you know, that actually that first time that I knew that I did all the work with a client from start to finish. And then the certificate got awarded. Yeah, okay, that was a big buzz because that's happened because I've helped you. So that was a little bit of a challenge for me, was just kind of finding that. And then I guess on top of that was experience. So why should a business owner, you know, why should a CEO listen to me? I joined, as I say, five, 6 years ago. So I was kind of mid-20s. Why would I listen to this girl that's just come out of the classroom? Literally. And yeah, so I've really worked on that. You know, I've done a lot of courses, a lot of training. I've learned from some fantastic people, my dad being my number one, and a couple of other business mentors along the way. And I've been very lucky to have that education. So yeah, and I'm working now on a master's in business to kind of fill out any other gaps that might be there as well. And that also helps me help my dad run the business. So yeah, I've really invested in myself, I think. Quite proud of that.
Yes.
Humble brag.
Yeah. No, yeah, amazing. And when do you hope to finish your master's?
So all being well, it should be this summer. So I'm literally just embarking on my dissertation now.
Is that 10,000 words?
12.
Crikey. Yeah, best of luck with that.
Thank you.
Well, what is it they say? An hour of planning saves you 3.
Yeah, they do say that, and that's good because I like to plan.
You're still in the planning
stage. I'm still in the planning stage, yes. I'm still sort of notebooks and musings, but yeah, I really need to get down to work.
I love it. Did you want to do a shout out for anyone that's helped you along the way?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've mentioned my dad and my mum, who we affectionately refer to as HR at Hantec. My younger sister Lucy's joined the business again, which is brilliant. She's our security screening expert, and it's great to spend more time with her. And I'm pretty sure my wife's listening. And yeah, I'm sure that there'll be some friends maybe that have tuned in that will rib me for this later if I've said anything too embarrassing.
You're doing great, honestly. You're doing great. So we talked about, it sounds like you had a little bit of imposter syndrome, actually, in the early days.
Do you know, I've never thought of it like that. But yeah, I that's probably a fair way of saying it.
But yeah. And then so obviously after that point, obviously I knew you were saying last week about COVID being a massive kind of hurdle for the business.
That was huge. So yeah, I've you know, just mentioned a couple of challenges that were for me personally, and they were quite small. When this country went into lockdown, we lost a client, a big client. It was 65% of our revenue. That's quite hard to say that.
Yeah.
That was a huge, I mean, instantly I was looking at teaching jobs, which was a terrible time because all schools had kind of locked down to necessary staff. I was really worried about where the business would go, and I bet my dad was even more worried.
Yeah,
so that was massive for us. We realised quite quickly that we had, for want of a better phrase, kind of put our eggs in one basket, so to speak. We really enjoyed the relationship that we had and the work we were doing, but we didn't think for one second that if this wasn't here anymore, that's over half of our revenue. Mm. So yeah, and the other issue we had, which I'm sure is a horror for you to hear, is we didn't really have any marketing. Mm. Hantech Systems proudly had developed over the years through word of mouth.
Yeah, a lot of referrals.
Nice referrals, yeah.
Such a powerful method of marketing.
It's amazing. And no one asks for them, do they? Ask for a referral. It's okay to ask for a referral, I think. But yeah, so we really had to kind of stiff up a lip. And I guess both of us, we're just happy to work hard. We're not really the kind of people that, I mean, we're support Arsenal. We don't really just sit down and go, oh, okay. We go through the rough and the smooth, you know, we go through it all. We get up, we move on. And that's kind of what we did. I spent a lot of time kind of working on all of our template documentation.
Yeah, give you an opportunity to overhaul some stuff.
Yeah, overhaul some stuff, really sort of make sure that what we had in place was going to really help our clients. We took our ISO toolkit online, got that on a portal on our website. We did kind of all that stuff. My dad worked with the local pub, of course he did, to help them understand furlough.
I see what he was up to.
Yeah, it was a good plan. So yeah, we really worked hard to, I think, get over that. And it, don't get me wrong, it took a long time. We're probably just coming out the other side now, through a lot of networking in Southampton. Actually, I'd, you know, lived here all my life in and around Southampton and never actually got out and met people. It's a bit short-sighted. So yeah, networking.
You're a bit of an advocate for networking now, aren't you?
I really enjoy it. Yeah, getting out and meeting people, I love it. So yeah, I love doing you know, things like this. Thank you again for having me today. We're members of Old Bond Store in Southampton, which has been a lovely way to meet new people. And yeah, we do a few other things as well. We run a peer-to-peer board. We co-chair that. So yeah, getting out and just meeting people, and helping people if we can.
What would you say to someone that's maybe thinking about doing some networking, or maybe they've just started their own business and they're sort of on the edge? You know, what would you say to that person?
If you're right at the start, I think obviously I'm only, you know, putting myself potentially in those shoes because it didn't apply to me at the time. But I would absolutely say just get out and meet people, understand what makes other people tick, not just for your business, but actually personally. It's great to spend time with people from all different walks of life, and understand kind of why they're doing what they're doing, because we're all doing it for a different reason. Mm. And I think that's really important at the start so that you can ensure that the kind of business you're setting up might perhaps appeal to lots of different people because you've taken the time to go and understand different people. And also you're just getting your name out there. You know, it's really important because it's kind of like, I don't know, like a little kid flicking stones up at windows. You know, if you flick enough, eventually one's going to break and you're going to get that first client. Yeah. So, you know, if you're new, yeah, just get out there and meet people. I think it's really important.
I'm a big believer of sort of putting things out to the universe because, of course, and you never know who you're going to meet.
Completely. Yeah, I really believe in that kind of that positivity that you're going to put out, you're going to get back. If you're quite a negative person, unfortunately, that's probably going to follow you around. So that kind of good vibes only is what I try and kind of put in my life every day.
Absolutely. I'd like to, if we can, I just want to touch on the aspect of the family business, because when we spoke earlier in the week, I said, God, that must you know, be challenging at times, and you were like, no, it's not actually.
No,
tell us about that.
I don't think so. I think, as I said, my mum did the right thing by making me go out, and she didn't make me, but telling me to go out and do something a bit different.
Yeah.
Because I was a different person then.
Yeah.
So I had to grow and learn and change myself a little bit. Otherwise, I might have clashed a little bit more with my dad. But he's my best friend. They all are. We're a really close family. And we spend a lot of time together, whether that's watching the football, going away on sort of camping and caravanning holidays and stuff like that. So, yeah, I can't say that working with my dad is a challenge, or working with my sister is a challenge, because I have a lot of respect for both of them. They're both far more knowledgeable than me in certain areas, and I feel that they respect me for areas that, that they might see me as being a little bit more of the business expert on. So we work really well together, and I don't see that changing.
It's a part of that sort of working well together. Have you kind of got your defined areas so that, you know, you're responsible for one area, your dad's responsible for another, and does that, do you find that helps? Or
yeah, sort of. What he and I do crosses over quite a lot. So that kind of, if I say the ISO compliance area of the business, both him and I do that. And we've got another colleague as well who's part-time and lives in Portugal now. He's kind of like an adopted uncle. He's been with the business since day one pretty much as well. So, yeah, we focus on that. Lucy focuses on the security screening side of the business because a lot of our clients have that as a need. So I can get involved in that if she needs a hand as well. But yeah, I think it does help that we've got our own areas because we don't physically work together every day. Mm. And maybe that's part of the success.
Yeah, it could be part of the winning recipe, couldn't it?
Absolutely.
I'm sure that will give hope to other family businesses out there, for sure.
I think you can do it. If I would say to someone, if they were thinking about going into business with family, you're probably on the right lines, because if you're at least thinking about it, you've entertained the idea, then there's probably good grounds to do it. Yeah. Just be honest, and it's difficult, but you can't be too sensitive. You know, when we're at work, we are co-workers. I kind of have to leave the fact that he's my dad as well at the door. So when he calls me Sweet Pea accidentally in front of a client, it's not so easy to do that. But no, on a serious note, yeah, I think you just have to kind of talk to them as though you would talk to another colleague. Don't talk to them as though you're father and daughter or husband and wife or brother and sister, because that's sometimes where it gets a little bit hazy.
I love it. Wise words. Hilliard, we're nearly out of time. But before we go, I'm just curious, you know, what's on the horizon for Handtech? What's next?
What's next? I would love to grow our team, maybe take it outside of the family, which would be quite scary. I'd love to grow it to bring in some other people that can help us operationally so they can get out and do a little bit of what I'm doing, and it'll give me and my dad a bit more time to work on that kind of high level strategy with our clients. Mm. And then we would have maybe a, you know, third, fourth, fifth person that could do some of the maintenance, if you like, of those client contracts. And I know that we would both love to kind of pursue helping other business owners, so taking it slightly away from compliance, but kind of growing that, as I mentioned, that peer-to-peer board space, and working within that as well to help business owners kind of work on their business rather than in their business.
And that's a really nice kind of way of putting it. And if there's any businesses out there or business owners that are thinking, you know, maybe I need to get in touch with the guys over at Handtech, you know, what do they need to do? Where should they go?
It's nice and easy. Check us out on LinkedIn. So Paul Wallace, Hannah Wallace Golden, Lucy Wallace, Handtech Systems has got a page on LinkedIn as well. We've got a website as well. So yeah, look us up, and we'll be very open to having conversations. Love coffee. So if you've got good coffee, I'll be there.
Or an Arsenal game.
Or an Arsenal game. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how well that'll always go, but we'll find out tonight.
Oh, I love that. Well, yeah, best of luck for the match tonight.
Thank you.
And Hannah, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio today.
Pleasure's been mine. Really enjoyed it.
No, maybe we need to look at doing a revisited in 12 months' time, perhaps, and we'll see how things are getting on.
I would love to do that.
All right. Well,
thank you.
You're welcome. Look, that's it for the business. If you'd like to tune in again next week, and I'll be interviewing another incredible guest. You've been listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. Bye for now.
Voice FM. Voice FM.
Don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes. And don't put in your recycling bin dirty tins and dirty plastic bottles.
If any of your recycling is dirty, greasy or wet, your whole bin could be rejected. So follow this golden rule. Keep your recycling clean, dry and loose. And remember,
don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes.
This message is supported by Voice FM. And if you want to know more about recycling in Southampton, visit voicefmradio.co.uk/recycling.